Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, love you to death. So humbled by everything you've done for me and my site in this project. This coach blows me away every time. This is our second podcast with Coach Steve Colfer from Cabrini. You need to go back and check out the 2014. Just put his name in the search box, you'll get it. 15 years now at Cabrini. 15 consecutive Colonial States Athletic Conference titles, 14 straight NCAA appearances, Division III, 213-58 career record, winning percentage 785, 10-time CSAC Coach of the Year, been a head coach for the North-South game. Interestingly enough, started as a high school coach. I'm going to butcher the name. We laugh about it. Salacianium, anyway, great stuff, man, and the podcast is filled. We talk about some of the stuff we talked about the first time around, got some interesting ideas on ground balls and how he's reinstituted that into his practice plans, free help, adjacent slides on the 4v4, kind of a neat little drill, the hub drill, does a lot of things I'll probably write up. Nice little face-off drill, good variation to the ghost drill. Great stuff. Again, I'm humbled by you. Without further ado, here is a really, really phenomenal coach that I've learned a lot from, Coach Steve Colfer, Cabrini.
Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. I was just talking to Coach. Coach, you like my radio voice there?
I love it.
Yeah. People call me mimicking me all the time, you know. both the people that call me mimic me. Anyway, you know, I'm a jerk for not having him back sooner. You guys love him. I love him. We're talking to Coach Colfer from Cabrini. I can't believe, you know, I feel like I just had you on. I can't believe it was like 2014.
It's crazy. No, it's crazy. It seems like it's just yesterday.
You were just a puff at the time, you know. Now you're an established legend guy, you know.
Yeah.
And all that
a legend
stuff.
In my own mind. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. If I could remember what happened 5 minutes ago at age 60, I'd be a legend in my own mind, too. But I keep forgetting who I am, you know.
Exactly.
Coach, welcome. Glad to have you
Thank
back.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate being back and spending some time with you and your listeners. Looking forward to it. You know, obviously, lacrosse is in the air this time of year. It's everywhere. The high schools are starting up here in Pennsylvania. The youth has been going on. The last couple weeks too, and obviously college, we're 4 games into it and getting ready for another big one this weekend. So
season is starting earlier and earlier, man. I mean, I remember somewhere in the back of my head, I don't think the Ivies are even allowed to start practice until February, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, February 1. Yeah, no, I think you're still right. It's February 1, yeah.
But yet, you know, I'm on my elliptical watching replays of all these games.
Yeah.
You know?
It's funny because it used to be we used to play every Wednesday and Saturday no matter what, and you just got into that routine, and now it seems like everyone's getting more into a football routine of Saturday and that prep time. A lot has to do with the speed of play, the way the game's played, the recovery time for your athletes. You know, I think some might say, well, coaches like to analyze and overanalyze, and some would say you just go play, but we find the Saturday schedule does allow our athletes to recover physically before we start filling their heads with the mental preparation for this week's opponent. So, you know, we came last week, we played a midweek game, you know, ironically, we came up short against a very good Dickinson team on Saturday. I don't think that was the reason, but you come home from that, you're on the bus ride home from that game thinking, you know, man, we don't have another midweek game for 3 weeks, and now we're just playing Saturday. And so it's a different pace, it's a different level of preparation, but I do think it does impact the athlete in terms of their physical recovery and allows them to, you know, get fully recovered and hydrated and prepared to play at their best on Saturdays.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw you some more kudos, man. You know, we talked very briefly before. I've had this conversation in depth with Bill Tierney on, I think, most of the podcast. You know, you just don't find in today's world lacrosse coaches that are head coaches at the NCAA level, whatever level it is, even MCLA, you know, when I coached Auburn. You know, that were high school coaches. You know, the progression process is grad assistant, you know.
Yeah.
And you were a high school
coach. Yeah.
And I've been working on this all day. Okay.
Yep. No, it's, you know, that
now
was some of the most...
Now it's AZ and them.
Yeah.
Salesianum.
Not even close. Salesianum. Salesianum.
I needed to put some sounded out letters on here. Yeah.
You know, well, but when in Delaware and around the northern Delaware area, everyone just cheats and calls it Sally's. So, I mean, it's...
I can handle that, man.
Yeah, so if you said Sally's in this neck of the wood, everyone would know what you were talking about, and you wouldn't butcher the name, and you would be in good shape. And you know, that was such a wonderful coaching experience, because what it taught me as a coach is you couldn't... There was no excuses. You had to design a practice plan no matter how many guys you had that day. You wanted to be productive. Did we have one goalie? Did we have two that day? You weren't sure. Our backup goalie would also play some midfield and maybe play attack. You know, so it really forced me as a coach to really be creative in our practice planning. Also change quickly, you know, on the fly, alter practice. But at the end of the day, still make it productive and get us better as the season went on. And I think that experience really shaped me, you know, because we'll sit, you know, after I get off the phone with you, I'll sit with my staff and we will plan out practice for today. And then inevitably at 2 o'clock I have my training room update and my trainers will come in, our physical therapists will come in and give me an update of who's playing, who can do what, you know. And we may have to alter a drill period, and we may have to say, they may say, hey, these guys are, you know, or a 50% go, use them in the first 50% of practice. So we flip-flop drills, we move things around quickly, and it's not the end of the world. You know, I don't, you know, we just do it, move on, and I think a lot of that comes from that high school experience where sometimes, you know, at the 11th hour, the AD may say, hey, you can't practice on the game field today because it's a little bit wet. Go over and use the half-practice football field. So you got to change everything, and you do it, and you move on, and you don't let the kids see that, you know, you're panicked or upset. You just you create a practice plan on the fly and you go. And I think that has really, you know, that experience as a high school coach really influenced me.
I think the biggest thing I learned as a high school coach, and I'm rambling here, but it took me a while, probably 30 years of being a head coach, to learn that the beginning of the season doesn't matter.
And
getting to the dance, I mean, there's big games in there. Maybe you have a tendency to schedule your conference games later. I mean, all those kind of things.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, you know, I had to fire a guy that was a great friend of mine, as an assistant coach, going nuts on the team after I think we were ranked like second or third or fourth, and we were playing a team that was ranked second or third or fourth, like the second game, third game of the year.
Right.
And it was a one-goal game, and we won at the end.
Right.
And the guy went nuts on the team.
Yeah.
And I tried talking to him, and he went nuts on a player, which, you know, it's a high school.
Yeah.
Really? Really? Mm-hmm. You think he dropped that pass on purpose? I mean, you know, really?
Right.
You know, and, you know, I tell the high school guys in the clinics all the time. Now, you're dealing with a little bit different mentality of a young man in college versus a high school kid. But, you know, in today's world with the millennials, you can't go nuts on those guys
more than once or twice a year.
Yeah, you know,
you get one or
wake
two.
Them up at halftime.
Yep.
You know,
you
got to know when to play that trump card. And if you play it the fourth game of the year, the next time you play it, all they're going to hear is wah, 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 wah. You know, and I hear it, you know, when I occasionally get called up, a guy says, oh, man, they moved this game. Can you ref for me this night? You know, I hear these coaches, you know, and what the coach is yelling is absolutely right on. You know, they went zone. We're going to do this. And the players have totally tuned them out, you know, and I can pretty much suggest with relative confidence that he barks at his team all the time.
Yeah.
You know, but the other thing, like I said, the big thing I learned was, you know, the season is a crescendo.
Yeah.
You know, not just planning out your first 2 weeks of practice, maybe getting, you know, one clear, one right, I mean, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, you got to be playing really, really well the last 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah,
and,
no, I agree. And your kids have to be bought in.
Get there, you know. Yeah, I mean, you're in the state championship game here. I think we had 7 losses.
Yeah.
And every one was invaluable.
You know, absolutely. I mean, we said it to the bus ride home. I said, the balance between the understanding of losses, we don't want to dismiss it, and we don't want to dwell on it. We want to find the ground somewhere in the middle. So we learn from it. So we don't want to dismiss an early season loss, and we don't want to dwell on it because it's March 4th. We're 3-1. We have another big one this week coming up. So we can learn from it, and we can move on. But you're exactly right. I mean, coaches, people outside love to label, that's a great win, that's a bad loss. You know, like that's for others to say. You know, what we will take from it is, you know, where did we – play well, and we did play well in certain spots, you know. It was four or five little things, you know, throughout the course of the game when you break the film down and you look at it, added up to one big thing, which was the loss on Saturday. And so, again, I think it's the finding the spot between dismissing it and dwelling on it and finding it in the middle and learning from it and moving forward is crucial early in the season.
I'm actually a lot firmer with my team after a win.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, I agree.
When I win, is I'm not saying I hammer them.
Yeah,
but you know, it might be, hey, listen, we're celebrating goals, you know, and
right.
we're six goals up. Act like you've been
right.
there.
Right.
Is this
no,
who
absolutely.
We want to be really,
sure.
You know, or what programs do we want to emulate? Do you see them doing these kind of things?
Right.
No, I agree.
And you know, after they lost, I think is at least for me, you know, over my career, you know, I've been blessed, man. I got, you know. All kinds of national awards and SEC awards and stuff. But at the end of the
mm-hmm.
day, you know, I love them when they're down, and I
mm-hmm.
hammer them when they're up.
Yep.
As a general rule of thumb. I mean, some games
it's
better,
a good one. It's a good one.
You know, not to do anything. You know,
yeah.
I mean, there's sometimes I don't even watch the film. You know, anyway.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about Cabrini.
Yes.
Last time we went
yes.
out from 3 to 3:30. We did our small group development,
mm-hmm.
everything that's entailed in that. We got a bunch of touches.
Yep.
And then at 3:30, we came out and went full squad.
Yep.
Are you still on that kind of philosophy?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we, you know, I think we've, you know, we've, we do some different things within those periods. You know, I think that those, that pre-period, that muscle memory is going to be influenced by your assistant coaches. And, we have, probably the last time we spoke, we had a different couple guys working there with in that pre. A lot of our younger assistants are working with those guys. PT Ritchie, who's one of my defensive guys, who has been with us now.
Your staff bios. You got a pretty good staff, coach.
Yeah, yeah, no, they're great guys, and they've been influenced by really strong coaches. PT played at Loyola under Coach Toomey, and then coached under Coach Natalin at Towson, and was back at Loyola under Charlie, and brings a really great wealth of knowledge, and you'd love him because every practice that he ever had at Towson and Loyola, he keeps the practice plan. He has binders and binders in his office of every practice plan. And I have a couple of them sitting here in front of me now. So.
You're giving me a lot more credit than I belong, man. I put all, you know, I think I've got like 80 drills or 90
yeah.
articles or drills on Lax Power and another
yeah.
250 on my site.
Yeah.
I used to have the binders. I'm a search box now, guy.
I hear you, man. Listen, there's a little bit. I'm a hybrid, a little old school, new school. It's okay, you know. I mean, it's what works for the individual. And then Coach Mita's working with our offensive guys and doing a lot of shooting stuff. He's our new GA. Came over, played at Villanova under Coach Corrado and Coach Connor, who, you know, have been doing some good things right down the road from us. And we're happy to add him to our staff. And then, you know, they get folded in with Coach Hill, who's our offensive coordinator, and Coach Camp, who works with our goalies and runs our box. So we have a really good, experienced staff. They work well together. They each have their strengths. And I think that also influences our practice design and what we're doing in those fundamental periods. But that 3 to 3:30 window is, you know, we look at that of us getting better throughout the course, and we add those, you know, 30 minutes up over the course of a week and add that up over the season. And we, you know, and not every guy can be there for every day because of the way our class schedule falls here. So the guys that are there two times a week or three times a week or four times a week, you know, that adds up over the course of the season, and we really stress the importance of that. And we tell them that's a great time to play a little game of make-believe, you know, and they have to be creative in their minds about what they're working on when, you know, when you're doing a lot of stuff with cones that are vision, you know,
Do you still rotate your coaches?
Yeah, absolutely. We do a lot of that throughout the course of practice just because it's just, it's easier and it's more efficient with our time, than moving players and shifting colors and breaking down, taking pennies over helmets. And, you know, we just rotate the coaches and that way we're getting, every player's being seen by every coach and everyone's going to see things maybe with a little bit of a different, lens. And I think that's really obviously highly important. And it just, especially when you're sharing a facility, which a lot of times at the high school and maybe even at the Division III and some even at Division I level, you're limited, you know, and you got a women's lacrosse team or you got a JV team or you got, a club team coming on behind you. You better, if you get 120 minutes or whatever it is, you better be efficient in that, or you're going to be looking at your watch and seeing the next team coming on warmed up, and you're trying to figure out why you didn't get through the last three things on your practice plan. And that adds up, you know, over the course of a week to, you know, a season, you're getting, not as much, you know, practice and muscle memory and doing the fundamental stuff right. So we try to be efficient in our practice planning. We try to manage the clock. You know, our team managers do a good job of that and keeping me on point and
yeah, we're at that level. Turns out to be Friday, and you're going, I didn't work on wing play on faceoffs all week.
Exactly. And it happens to all of us. Listen, Mike, it happens to all of us. You know, you're thinking, okay, did we do enough in that? And, you know, but again, at the end of the season, you don't want to look back and say, hey, there's 10 things we really didn't cover. And I think that's important in November and December when fall ball is over to sit down with your staff and get on a whiteboard and write out, like, here's the 25 non-negotiable must-haves in our practice plan, daily, weekly, monthly, you know, and kind of look at it and keep that board, take a picture of it on your phone or keep the board somewhere or put it somewhere and go back to it and remind yourself, what are we working on, what have we done, what haven't we touched on, and let that influence, you know, your design of practice so you don't have those moments.
I think, you know, actually this is one of my subject that I spoke on at US Across listeners. I don't know when they'll have it posted, but you can go watch all those slides and videos and everything. But, you know, I used to do that macro plan. We used to call it a macro plan. You know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then you talk to guys like, I mean, so many lacrosse coaches, I'm getting off subject, but I mean, so many lacrosse coaches are a lot more analytical than listeners or viewers or fans realize.
Sure.
I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Guys like Alberici. Guys like Pressler. I mean, they, I don't want to say this inappropriately, they could have been an engineer in another life.
Yeah.
You know?
I think analytics is and has invaded all
practice
professional
plans
sports.
And scheduling every minute,
sure.
You know, and having their macro. I mean, Alberici, I think his macro plan for the spring is the first draft. Obviously, it changes every week, you know, but his macro plan is done after the second week of fall ball, you know, and
sure.
They lay it in depending on what they got and so on and so forth. But what I was going to say is I used to take that macro plan. You know, okay, I don't need three rides in 2 weeks to get ready for the first game. You know,
sure.
I don't need, so what am I going to put in? What's the priorities? And, you know, after week two of the regular season, you know, the macro plan never got visited again.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, that I'm older and maybe not as, you know, I don't know, hopefully a better coach, hopefully I'll learn it.
Right.
But, no, really, I mean, you know, I think the biggest thing you learn after, I was telling a player the other day, after 35 years, what I've learned is coaching is overrated. You know, Tierney told me he doesn't like Saturdays because he can't coach.
That's true. I mean,
you know,
it's the other way.
Make three or four adjustments in a game, or maybe
sure.
You know, they're doing something you really need to adjust to at halftime, or you see something you can do. You didn't want to show it to him in the first half against a good coach
right.
In a close game because you didn't want him to have halftime to react to it. You know, I mean,
right.
Obviously, good coaches understand when they're coaching against a great coach, you know, and how
right.
That changes the dynamics of the game.
Well, I always talk about that with recruits, too. I mean, I think players, what we have to understand, players and coaches, fundamentally, we look at things very, very differently. Coaches love practice. It's our laboratory. It's our space where we can design, fix, tinker, do all the things that, you know, we think streamline the process. And players love to play. They want to play games. They play, the kids here at Cabrini would play a game every day if they could, you know. And so I think going back to practice design, that has influenced how we've designed practice. Make them competitive. Let them compete. Let them get the elements of that competition that they love playing the game and the sport for, but also do it in a way that we can constructively, you know, coach and challenge them and also see a progression through the course of the season. So,
well, now
I
the timing
that,
in the South is March, okay?
Yep.
And in South, you know, I'm in Atlanta, most of the listeners
yep.
know. We're on our fifth or sixth game, okay?
Sure.
And we're just now putting in a 3-3 man up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had some great looks, and our talent matches up extremely well for a 1-4-1.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a couple of guys that can throw over the 1-4-1 extremely effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a rifle up top. But anyway, yeah, I mean, there's certain things that we had to get in. I would have loved to have had three formations on the man up, but
sure.
We prioritize that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you do the first 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And then the other thing is, that doesn't mean I still don't want to get it in.
Right.
You know, it's still,
no,
I mean, there's certain teams or I always find with me, man, in the middle of the season, I find one or two guys that I would have never dreamed would be on my man up, man down that are now on my man up, man down.
I agree, and that's what makes us. I mean, I think that's the beauty of coaching. You know, I think that's the process. That's the beauty of it, and it's a 1 year experiment. You know, every team has a 1 year life expectancy because next year's Cabrini team is going to be different than this year because we're going to subtract seniors, we're going to add freshmen. The personality, the makeup of talent is going to change. So within that 1 year, you want to you want to pull the right levers at different times, and that's the beauty of this profession. Sometimes it's the agony of this profession.
I'll never forget asking Sheehan if he recruits guys trying to get into his offense at
Le Moyne,
thank you. And yep. He started laughing. He said, well, I could, but I don't know what my offense is going to look like till after fall.
There's some truth to that. I mean, I think...
But the high school guys and the rec guys that listen to us, they think that this coach has a system.
Yeah.
You know, I started to tell you before, I'm howling on my elliptical watching the Virginia game, and the announcers are talking about how Lars Tiffany has brought the upscale lacrosse to Virginia and how he's a run-and-gun guy and his style of offense. And you're going, you need to go back and listen to some of my podcasts, man.
Right.
I mean, Lars Tiffany changed the whole way he coaches.
Yes.
Bill Tierney totally changed the whole way he
coached,
his last year at Princeton, and talks about it very honestly. Depending on what he has,
I mean, you got to adapt and change, and if you don't, you're gonna get passed by. And I think that to me is the part of coaching that I love, and I love that pursuit of that, and I love that, I always joke, when we're running scout team man up, whether we're running, the last week we're running Lynchburg stuff and Coach Kadelka's doing or Coach Webster stuff doing. Inevitably, when we run one of their or two of their man ups, it looks like the greatest thing. I mean, we score on it every time. You know what I mean? I mean, we're like, all right, well, there's some merit to this, right? Why are they doing it? Because it works. So you know what? We're just gonna take a few days. We're gonna play them. Hopefully, and then we're gonna rebrand it and we're gonna call it and let our kids come out and be like, wait, I mean, so you can if you're not seeing what works and taking and rebranding yourself throughout the course of the season in terms of maybe some offense, defensive adding stuff in, then shame on you as a coach because that's what we get paid to do. So,
all right, man. So then we've done our fundamentals, for lack of a better description, in a macro term.
The thing in the fundamentals, what we're doing this year, and I was reading or listening to one of the things you did before, and I think I might have been with Coach Myers at Ohio State doing using tennis balls. We used tennis balls the last couple of years. This year we went to a softball, it looks like a lacrosse ball, but it's still
ball.
Yes, sponge ball, it's rubber-based, not air-based, not the pink ones that fly all over. It's a little bit, and a point you had made before we got on the air about, I think you said Brody Merrill said, you have 37 3v2 drills on your site, which is most of our practice design is 3v2, 4v3, 5v4, 6v5. We create situations out of a full field, half field, and those types of things. So early in the season, we interject those in our fundamental period, whether we're doing stick work or offensive and defensive development, which is our next, we throw in, we'll do the same drill one day with a lacrosse ball, and the next day we may do the same drill with a softball. It makes our players adjust accordingly to the balls that they're using and their hands and catching and receiving and those types of things. Two, if you're 32-43, your goalies are getting wailed on from real close, and it's January 26th in Radnor, Pennsylvania. It's probably about 22 degrees, and so that soft ball allows them to get to the pipe, lets them stay big, make the save, and not take the ball off their thigh that's going to put them on the sideline for, 5-10 minutes or the rest of the practice.
Let me ask you a question, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that, when we talked before, you were one of the budding great new coaches, right? Now you're like on the borderline of, where you been? 14 or 15 consecutive NCAA appearances. It's not easy in D3. And it's especially not easy once you get past the first game.
Sure.
Everyone's
good.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, I mean, there's so many good teams.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so many really good coaches.
Sure.
But what I want to tell you was, I'm sure nobody says anything to you, but I got a lot of pushback from my guys
using
on the
softball
3v2 with the tennis balls because
no, don't
they
stick
were
with it.
You know why?
I mean,
because they were having trouble with it, you know?
The tennis ball does grip a little bit. I will defend them in one respect, that the tennis ball does kind of stick a little bit, and it doesn't come out. This ball that we bought this year, it comes out a little bit cleaner. It's a little bit heavier. You know, a lot of times the kids throw that stick through they shoot it or they pass it, and it's so light coming out. This ball's got a little bit more weight to it, and it just comes out a little bit cleaner, and it doesn't float as much in the air, kids don't feel like their shoulders are flying out of their sockets because they rip the stick through the shooting zone and the ball's just too light for them, and it just, you know, there's no resistance there. But I think it helps our long poles with their hands. It helps our D middies, our face off kids, you know, just, and it also, when you're playing odd man lacrosse, it saves your goalies from taking 500 shots at 4 yards that are not conducive to them over the entire season. Obviously we know our game's got to be played with the real ball, and we use them most of the practice, but I think interjecting softball work into your practice, there's a lot of things that benefit you, and the resistance, we get it too to some degree, but I think it outweighs that. You know, I think what we see is our kids' hands just get better and better over the course of the season, and it saves some wear and tear on
well, the one tip I didn't have till about a year and a half ago was, you know, we bought, you know, like a 3-foot-high bag of tennis balls for like $6 bucks or something.
Yep, yep.
The used tennis balls are so much better.
Yes, they are.
The fuzzy ones weren't nearly as good.
Yeah.
And then I get a lot of emails. I had one guy tell me he shoots them with like a he cuts a little slit and he puts water in them with like a turkey baster.
Nice. I didn't think about that, but I might be on it.
But I was talking to him, it was at a clinic or something, I don't know, at a conference, and the guy's going, yeah, I still get pushback on the tennis balls too, but at the end of the day, you know, they're kind of fun to play with in the summer when it's 90 degrees.
Sure, sure,
you know,
no, absolutely.
You get spray every time you catch it.
Yeah. We've had success with the white softball, it's a little bit harder, a little bit more, you put it next to a, you know, a lot of times I have to literally film with my hands because you look at them visually on the ground, and until you pick it up, you can't tell, is this a real ball or is this a softball? We keep them in a bucket to the side, and we use certain drills when we roll them out, but we do feel that, you know, it has helped us in our fundamental period, and
or where you bought them, Coach?
I think it was like Nomad Lacrosse was the website, and I can't remember, Nomad Lacrosse was the group that, and I mean, I think we got a case of 100 of them for, you know, $100 or something like that. I mean, it was a minimal purchase against our budget, but, something that we've used and will continue to use. And, in that fundamental period, that's what we're working on. You know, the other thing too that we've really built into our fundamentals, and we've always done elements of it, but every day we are going to ground ball work. And why more so than now is because the wings are back in lacrosse. You know, with the pinch and pop face-off guy carrying the ball in the back of your stick, the wings became obsolete. You know, you could have put me out on a wing when you had a pinch and pop guy who was winning it to himself, and it didn't matter, you know. But now with the face-off rules at the college level, and then obviously they're, you know, in most of the high schools, it's brought your wing play back into play, and you really need to have to get those ground ball guys and those athletes back on there and fight for those 50-50 ground balls or those 2v1 ground balls. And so every day it's something that we probably got away from a little bit because the face-off was pinch, pop it up to yourself, run down, and have a kid with a stick that can only face off, awkwardly throw it to your attackman, and get the hell off the field. Now he's got to, you know, go scrap for a ground ball, scoop it, run, make a pass, and play early offense or defend. And ground ball work, 1v1, 1v1 ground balls, 2v2 ground balls. We do another little drill where we have all the kids kind of back on GLE or back behind the goal, and balls are up, you know, maybe at the restraining line with a coach, and the coach will call out, you know, 32, and the first number is always the offensive number. So three offensive guys come up, they put 1 foot in the crease, 2 defensive guys come up, and he rolls it out, 32 ground ball. So the offense scoops it, they play a 32 to the, with a goalie in, 32 to the goal. If the defense scores it, even though they're man down, those 2 guys plus the goalie got to clear it. You know, so they're scooping it, they're running for their end line, they're hitting the goalie, goalie's hitting an outlet and getting it out. And sometimes we'll go 12, you know, so it'll be one offensive guy, two defensive guys. It'll, you know, we'll go 33. We'll give them different formations to play out of. And once the ground ball is scooped, if you're an offensive player, it's scoop it, move it one more, attack the cage. If you're a defensive kid, scoop it, roll pressure, clear your hands, make that, you know, clearing pass either to the goalie or that redirect pass across the field and get it out. So the ground ball play in that fundamental period is back heavy here at Cabrini, just because we've seen how the wings are now so much more heavily involved, in the faceoffs, and it's really, something that we, really think is, an important piece of our, daily preparation.
You got a name for that drill?
You know, Coach Richie brought it from Loyola, and he credits Dan Schimatti at Richmond. So Richmond, we call it the Spider Drill, as a shout out to the Richmond Spiders.
Spiders, yeah.
So we call it Spider Drill, and it's just you know,
well, that's pretty good, man. I mean,
yeah.
I have to tell you, you're way above the norm. Although I was, like, you know, every day working on my resume. On last time we talked, you said when your budget increased, and you've already got a, you know, I think you got like five assistants or five-man staff or something. Anyway, you told me that on the next budget you were going to get a creative director to name the drills because your drills were like exceedingly boring. Although way above the norm, you know, when we got to NASCAR and some of the other things we talked about last time.
But like we always talk about, you know, there's not many original ideas in this sport. It's a lot. I think the difference in lacrosse is that we are the wealth of knowledge that is shared amongst coaches, and so that being, I always also like to give some little honorarium if we take an idea from another coach or another program to at least incorporate that in the name, you know, and so to make it.
Well, that's a nice thought, but that's just not necessary. Cause I'm gonna email you my resume, and I want to be the creative name drill director for Cabrini.
Absolutely.
No, seriously, my cousins are all in Mechanicsburg, Dillsburg.
Yep.
I got a lot of places to stay.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Just like, you know, every other week, you know, fly up and work on creative names.
Absolutely. You're hired. I mean, you're hired. And that,
well,
those are really.
Talk about after the stretch.
Yep.
You know, you came up in a rather unique, and I'm going to share that, or should talk about this with you in a second. And it was an everyday thing. I mean, it was, I used the term de facto, which I still have no clue what that means. But you were talking about, you know, it was a 3v3, new group, 4v3, 4v4, 5v4, with new players come out every time.
Yeah, our build-up drill. Yeah,
you know, we have probably... I don't even know, Coach. I would guess 40% now.
Mm-hmm.
Even before the station work, are introducing practice with a 3v2.
Mm-hmm.
Have one coach, I can't remember who it is off the top of my head, maybe Haverford, they were doing a 2v1.
Yep.
Like,
mm-hmm.
For 7 minutes. Just the tone, you know, of practice.
No, I agree.
You've always stuck in my head, or the previous podcast stuck in my head, because that was, although it was fast paced and guys flying in and out and playing to a quick shot, it was 3v3, then 4v3, then even up. Ended in, I think, 6v5 and then reset to 3v3.
And here's the thing, for the coaches who are saying, well, I have a high school team and I only have 25 kids, well, you don't have to build it out all the way to 65. You know, I mean, you can go 3v3, 4v3, 4v4, 5v4, stop and reset it. You know, I mean, sometimes the coaches, I've sat with local high school coaches and gone through practice plan or they've watched and, you know, we don't have the numbers to, you know, I said, well, just, you don't have to build it out all the way to 65. Go 32, go 33, go 43, 44, stop, reset, and go back. I mean, you can still, oh, okay, you know, that's, yeah, we can do that. You know, we can, that won't wear us out. And,
well,
and again,
the only other comment I would make there is, you know, maybe you've got a developmental high school team.
Right.
And they struggle with 4v3 or 5v4.
Sure.
That first drill, whether it is after your fundamental station work or whether it is before you stretch, I mean, we're actually running it before we stretch, in before our shooting drills. A 3v2, kind of what we call a swing drill, where we can put two cones anywhere. You got to run around a cone, and a different guy brings in the ball wherever I blow the whistle and point my finger. You know, so we can emulate a guy getting beat behind off ball, a guy getting beat up top on ball. I mean, it's got all kinds of things you can do. Cool little drill.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I got it from Andy Towers many, many years ago.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, you know, I've been or coached teams or helped teams at camps where the guys couldn't handle the 4v3 with the ball starting a different place every time. You know, if the reps were exactly the same every time, they could kind of handle it. But the point of that drill to open practice was to set the pace and get the kids excited about banging the ball.
Absolutely.
You know, and if they can't handle 5v4, then don't do 5v4. You know, run it
right
up to 4v3 or 3v2 or 4v4. I mean, or they, you know, they struggle when you get to the 4v4 slot. There's a time and a place for that in this particular practice.
Yep.
But that drill to open practice is the purpose is to set the tone, get the fur flying, get the excitement up. And I was curious that you ran that, you know, even odd even.
Yep. Well, I think that engages the defensive player instead of him just going through the motions and thinking, well, this is just an offensive touch drill. This is just, you know, we're always going to be even. We're always going to be man down.
I get it.
You know? So, but I think a lot of this goes back to a coach that I had, a guy with me maybe 6-7 years ago who's down now on Coach Torpy's staff down at High Point, Coach Garland, who's running, you know, helping run their offense down there. He played at Drexel collegiately under Chris Bates and, you know, back in the day before, Drexel built out all their facilities. They used to practice over at Franklin Field, which is UPenn's home field, because it was there. It was the only turf that they had. But they had the trade-off was they had to go every morning at 6 a.m. So, you know, Batesy would say, listen, it's tough enough to get kids out of their bed at 5 a.m., over to the locker room 5:15, you know, practice ready to go 5:45. And they did that in January, February, March, no matter what the temperature was. So they started practice with a little competition drill just to get kids excited at 6 a.m. It's cold in Franklin Field in Philadelphia in February. Like, and I always thought, you know, that is a, you know, it's a way to engage them, get them better, but get them excited about practice, which is what you said is exactly right, you know, and
well,
I think that does.
Exactly right, so I'm sure you'll find some fault in that in a little bit. But is that still de facto for you? Is that a...
Yeah, we do. I mean, we'll do that pretty much. You know, I don't know if we say we do it every day, but we'll do it, you know, probably every other day. Some days we'll just do a straight up drill. We'll go, 32, 43, 54, 65, just to get it's the same concept. It just never goes even. Other days we'll do the build up where it goes even, down, down, and, end it with that way. Just to give it a little, you know, give them a little variety, but I think the build-up drill is a great one. It gets us going, gets our sticks going, gets our defensive minds in, gets our goalies talking.
So, Coach, does the 4v4 or the 5v4 5 portion of that ever drag? I mean, do you have,
have
an inherent...
No, because we just say, listen...
On this? I mean, we're
going to
go for 15 seconds or 8 seconds.
We go 7 minutes on or 5 minutes on or 6 minutes on. We may vary it. And they know, like, to get their touches, they're going quick. And it's no cradle. That up situation is just no cradle go. And if it's an even 4v4, we want our offensive kids to press. We want them, you know, throw down, pick down, throw down, screen away. We want to get a quick look. And if it's dragging, I'll say, you got 10 seconds, clock's on. And they got to create a shot in 10 seconds, so we're out, and we're not dragging. And I think a lot of that is how we want to play to begin with. So I would say I may have to say that maybe twice a week, you know, where kids are, you know, trying to run an elongated 4v4, you know, where
well,
it's
on
just,
credit, I tell you what, you mentioned it, credit to Coach Bates.
Yeah.
You know, the whole
absolutely.
The two-man game was coming back to, you know, the influx. I think a lot of fans think or high school coaches think the influx of the Canadian game. You know, Bates ran pretty incredible 2-man-0 at Drexel, man.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we ran that for a number of years and still run a variation of it to within a sense, you know. But, I mean, I just think it's, you know, when you have the right, going back to what you said about Coach Shannon Lemoyne, you know, what offense are you going to run? Basically, when you have kids that can run that slip game, you know, and then have good hands and catch that slip pass, and you have players that can throw that little lever pass, that little slip pass, it's hard to defend because you put pressure on that on-ball defender and that off-ball guy that their communication has to be 100% every time or you're giving up a 6-yard shot point blank. So I do think that, you know, that offense is very effective, and if you have the right personnel, it still can be very deadly for you.
Well, and then when we spoke a couple of years ago, Coach, you were still doing, albeit some creative things, but then moving into the Y drill.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, on the podcast, you know, whatever it is, coming up on 150 hours or something in the library, hearing less and less on the Y drills. And kind of being replaced almost with an influx of 5v5.
Well, it's funny. We do alter them on and off. Yeah, I mean,
somebody you know really, really well, Jancic, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
A huge 5v5 guy versus a 4v4 guy, or at least a year ago when I talked to him, whenever the last time was. Speaking of Lutherans. yeah. So are you still got that heavy emphasis?
Well, we do a 4v4 because, you know, we do Dubai, and because what we're finding is, yes, a lot of teams like that inside guy because there's still a crease slide package that you have. But to Coach Richie's influence defensively, we provide a lot of help adjacently. You know, we call it free help. You know, if your man is going to stand 8 yards outside the box, you know, and they're running offense, why are we guarding you? We're not. We're going to free help. We're going to take that defender and, you know, help underneath and stay there and take away those lanes in the middle of the field. And so you become almost, you're still coming from the crease, but if we can give you free help adjacent to take away a dodge lane. So what that 4v4 does, after you go through that initial Y drill and you get, you know, your look, and all of a sudden it kind of, kids just move naturally out of that Y as it happens. Now you better be sliding adjacently, and you better know where you can help and how much distance you can give off your man to take away, you know, a lane next to you where the ball may be. And so I think that 4v4 work, as much as it is a emphasize of a crease slide and a two slide, is also, once it breaks down and the Y kind of shifts out of that formation quickly, which will happen, your defensive players better get real comfortable and real good in their conversation / communication in that adjacent help and slide package. And I think so there is validity still running a 4v4.
Comment, yeah.
You know, and the 5v5 we do too. You know, I mean, we do some of that too as well, so we can get that in. And if you have a kid who's got good hands inside, it really puts a lot of pressure on teams to make sure you're getting a slide. You know, if we leave him, that we have a two slide getting to him, or he's catching it on a low C or a high C and finishing it in the back of the net. So I do think that we do use both of them, and the reasons why we do both because they help us on both sides of the ball. You know, I think there are drills that are intrinsically designed.
Interesting comment. I love that working on the adjacent side of the 4v4s. You know, and I think you see more and more coaches, whether it's a delayed motion look, whatever the definition
yep.
of motion is. I mean,
yep.
you even know
yep.
it anymore.
Yep.
Guys, whether it's the delay in the motion or whether it's by design, I know, you know, we have put in a lot of open set stuff.
Yeah, sure,
you know,
backdoor
picks and stuff.
Yeah, uh-huh.
For teams that are exclusively or the best pull is playing in the crease so he can be the slide guy, kind of like
yep.
the backer zone days, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And I am showing my age. You know, coaches today, they don't even know what a backer zone is. Are you kidding me? You know, are you
Ward Melville backer zone, you better have known that, you know what I mean?
Well,
so.
In NYIT, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But then if you had it explained by the coach, you had to be willing to put up with some profanity at the time. right? Am I
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I shouldn't have said that. I have to delete that out. But anyway, I am old. Yeah, I mean, you got to be prepared for open set stuff, too. And,
oh, I mean,
and
it's...
If you're exclusively with a crease slide and somebody's good at, you know, then what happens is invariably the guys sag into the crease.
Yep.
And you can get some nice looks from
and then your
to
hands
time
are
time
free. I mean, we always say then our hands are clean. Yeah, absolutely, to pass and assist and shoot the ball. And if teams are allow us to keep our hands clean as much as, you know, then we're gonna be able to score goals, you know, or at least get the opportunity to get good shots on cage or throw or assist the ball. And obviously we feel those statistics are, you know, obviously trying to assist the ball as much as possible is key to our success. But, yeah, the 4v4, the integrity of the Y drill, and the other thing with the Y drill is, you know, you move the dodging point around, you know, the circle a little bit. You don't just put it at X and you just don't put it top center so that the Y, you know, you dodge off the high wings, you dodge off the low wings, you dodge, you know, GLE in the corners and kind of shift your Y a little bit to give your offensive players a different dodging angle, give your defensive players a different perspective with their feet and their hips and what they're trying to take away. But then inevitably, as soon as you go one touch, two touch, that Y is going to kind of break down and you're going to play 4v4 in space, and that's where you have to go back to that adjacent help and slide. And so we do see some benefit there for our defensive players, not only in a crease slide, but also in that.
Well, we talked about it last time. We actually run the Y drill sometimes.
Yep.
not at all with the Y front to back or back to front.
Sure.
With the Y exclusively laterally.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You and I were talking a little bit about Pete Mandanero in the last one, who was down at Piedmont. Now he's back at Hudson High School. Just too much time away from his kids. He's got two young kids. He's a wonderful
guy. Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, he always ran a lateral offense, or part of his offensive package was lateral with a lot of movement with the feeds coming from the wings.
Sure.
And it gave teams trouble because they didn't see it and they didn't prepare for it. You know?
Right. Yeah, and no, absolutely.
That's a perfect example of what you talked about before, you know, where we're kind of looking at it. You know what? There's some merit to running this, our offense from laterally.
Absolutely. But I also think you want to take elements of what you're doing in small-sided practice drills and build it up to that, you know?
Well, and you know, occasionally we'll get some attackmen that are just the best attackmen, but he's much more of a post-up shooter, and he can't carry 5 feet, you know?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
But if you can free him up on backdoor screens, feeding from a lateral position, whether it's lateral low or lateral high, say you're running open set and running the pick in there, you know, you can get that guy some looks where he's in a better position to be successful.
Absolutely.
Hey, man, I didn't take good notes before, but I was intrigued. A different look of that coming off the Y when we talked before was your 4v4 hub drill.
Yeah. Yep.
And
so the hub, basically,
four cones out there in a diamond?
Yeah, like a little diamond, a little hub, a little, you know, you know, or we say PT, you know, protect the paint, basically a basketball analogy about protecting that middle part of the field and kind of building out four cones in there, putting a defenseman on that. And they go 4v4, defensemen start in, as the ball gets blown in by a coach, ball rotates in a certain direction, whether it be counter or clockwise, players have to catch it outside shoulder and roll to give the defensive player a chance to run out when his guy is hot, and what we're looking at this point, how he breaks on the ball, how he approaches, how he breaks down, where is his weight. You know, at that point, the ball is not live. It cannot be attacked to the cage. It's got to make a full rotation back to where it started, so that you're working on your defense getting in, approaching properly, getting their weight in the right position, to get your stick out in front, you know, and then once the ball makes it back to wherever it started and it's in the live 4v4, but again, your guys are really helping in on the hub more so than and really protecting that inside and working out to the ball and approaching properly and closing to the right distance and not letting guys get a full head of steam onto them as they begin their dodge. And so the hub really emphasizes that kind of protect the paint mentality. It works on our fundamental passing on the outside. And in the early parts, maybe that first three passes, it our defensemen running out, accelerating, de-accelerating, approaching properly, weight in the right spots, stick in the right spots, and being in a position that if that kid was live and able to attack your, you know, your front foot, are you able to defend that and take away, you know, the middle of the field or keep him underneath or keep him down an alley depending on where the placement of the ball is. And so, again, there's three or four little things that add up to a big thing, and then
yeah,
we play it out in a 4v4.
Let me ask you a couple of quick questions. Do you have the four offensive lines outside of the four cones?
Yeah. They're going to be in a square or a diamond, you know what I mean, almost mimicking the, yeah, so they're outside that, you know, and you
and
have got
the,
your ex-
the first defensive time around the outside is almost like a skeleton recovery drill.
Yes. And,
guy,
and it's
mean,
also...
In speaking, right? The guy's going out, approaching, and then he's recovering back inside to the hub.
Yes. And it also forces our defense or offensive players to, you know, if they're standing flat, and they know they can't go to the cage, and they're just standing there not moving off the ball, not putting themselves in a good position, maybe not being into his defenseman and popping out, they're going to get the hell beat out of him. Because here comes that defenseman out, he's approaching, he's able to slap gloves, he's able to get on you, he's able to take the ball away, and you're not able to go to the cage. You're not able to make an evasive move. You can only pass it to your adjacent. And so it forces our offensive players to, you know, move and know, hey, listen, until and then it's the offense's revenge, because now once the ball's made it around, now it's a 4v4 with lots of space, you know, and obviously in a 4v4 we feel the offense is going to have the advantage because they're able to run into a lot of space, there's a lot of lanes there to be had, and so there's a lot of little things in there that allows you to then build up to a 4v4 situation, and you're not just, you know, wasting that opportunity of your offensive players developing, even though the hub drill may be designed as a defensive drill in concept.
So then, Coach, when you get to the where the offense is free,
yeah,
okay,
Yep.
Those guys are spaced outside almost like a little surrogate open set
yep.
versus,
yep.
you know,
yep.
we're having guys forced inside with a Y.
Sure, sure.
Are you integrating in there? The first look has to be a pick on ball or off ball or a slip or
we
the
will,
first look has to be a drive.
Yeah, we'll
getting a 1v1 in there.
Yeah, we'll say inevitably, like we'll say maybe before the show, hey, let's really work on pass screen away. You know,
yeah, that was a really
pass.
Good question, man. I'd appreciate you saying like good question or something.
That, sorry, I appreciate it. I my brain's going right into the answer, so if I'm answering it that quickly, it's all assumed. I would assume by your listeners that is a great question. You know what I mean?
See, there
so,
you go. Okay.
But we will give them little rules before each day. Say, okay, today we're going to work on pass pick down. We're going to pass screen away. We're
right.
going to, or just, you know, let's attack the short stick and let's everyone kind of fade behind the ball a little bit, or you know those types of things. So we do change the rules as we go through the course of the week. Again, looking at our practice design, we'll say, okay, what did we work on, and were we able to do the three or four things that we feel are really important to our 6v6 offense? In with on ball attack and off ball movement and so that's really kind of how we handle that. But sometimes
that
you
that
know,
would
you,
also be kind of a cool little scout look.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, if you're playing a team that is 60% two man games.
Uh huh. Oh, absolutely.
For whatever reason, maybe that's what their talent is. Maybe they got three guys out there that aren't as good as the other three. I mean, whatever
yeah.
it turns out to be. Man, you could do some cool things with that.
We, to your point, we really just did that 2 weeks ago getting ready for Lynchburg. Lynchburg loves to run like a three high across the top, one inside, and they run a lot of, it's almost like the old Princeton style basketball,
yeah.
you know, pass pick, and what they're anticipating is that defensemen are switching everything, and every time they switch, you step, you know, you're giving up 2 yards, 2 yards, 2 yards. Well, if they start that pass pick at 13 and you're giving up 2 yards in three or four passes, now they're at 8 or 9 with their hands clean, they're shooting it. So we take a little variation of this drill and just do a three across the top and one inside and just do a little bit differently 4v4 drill, not necessarily the hub drill, but yeah, I think taking what you're going to see an opponent do in 6v6, but scaling it down to 4v4 work, or 3v3 work or what have you, can then, when it's time to go 6v6 scout work, they've been doing 3 or 4 days of it and they may not even realize what they're doing it, but then when we run that scout team offense, they say, oh, this is why we were doing this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, as now the game plan is being unveiled, you know, Thursday and Friday for Saturday's game. So I think that's important. And I know sometimes with the high school coaches, it's tough when you're playing Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, or Tuesday, Thursday,
yeah.
Friday. But I think if you can, you know, incorporate some stuff into your drills that still makes you better, but also prepares you for that scout look later in the practice, then.
Well, the other thing at the high school level is, I mean, you have it where everybody you play is a foe, but I mean, at the high school level,
right.
you know, if you know the top 10 coaches in Atlanta, as an example,
yep.
or the top 10 coaches in Westchester.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of know what they're going to run.
Sure,
you know?
sure.
That
yep,
doesn't
absolutely.
Mean you can stop it.
No, I hear you.
I was looking at a man-up drill or a man-up score just the other night, and I looked at a great older Christian guy that I coach with, and I'm going, that's pretty much what we just talked about a half hour ago, isn't it?
Exactly.
And what we ran the day before, time and time again, I mean, it was a subtle wheel. You know,
sure.
with two guys circling back from X coming up front, you know, was,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, a guy came, there wasn't, you know, we didn't, I coach at a very small Christian school now, only 150 boys in the entire upper school.
Okay.
Man, we didn't have a single Christian within 20 yards of that devil, you know? I mean, yeah, like.
That's funny.
Although at the Christian school, you got to be careful what you say, you know, because I have a saying
it.
That I say way too much.
Yes.
You know, when I tell the polls, you know, focus on the recovery, you know.
Right.
I mean, just focus
right.
on the recovery. And I think that's
right.
such a big difference in lacrosse, you know, I
yeah.
mean, from the old days. But I used to always use the phrase, you know, Jesus couldn't make that slide. and I'm well aware of the fact that Jesus
well, I think most
could
offenses,
make that slide.
Yeah,
you know?
Most offenses now are designed to attack the recovery, you know, and the teams that recover well, you get your challenge, and the teams that are – Their recovery is a little bit more labored or a little bit more inconsistent, then you create some offense, you know, And I think in our scouting, we're always looking for the best possible way to recover against certain offensive looks. You know, and that's probably what we spend most of the first half of our week doing is watching the other team that we're prepping for, their offense, and what is the most efficient way to recover. And sometimes we are changing from what we did one Saturday to another because the offenses, the way they're designed now, are really designed to attack recovery. And I think that that's you know, most of our offensive scout work and video work that we're doing throughout the course of the week.
Oh, man, we're coming up on it.
Yep.
Listen, I mostly reviewed some of the cool stuff we talked about before.
Anything
to mind, Coach, or anytime new assistants, it seems like new drills come with them, which is pretty cool.
There's a couple. I mean, one of the things we always struggle with was, and again, this isn't revolutionary, but, you know, incorporating face-offs and, have, you know, a lot of these face-off guys who kind of like stand over on the sidelines and do their drills and, you know, but then incorporating them into practice in a way that allows us to get good face-off work and wing work. And we've been using it more and more this year. It's just 9v9 face-offs where there's just two defensemen on each side, three attackmen on each side, and then you get your face-off guys and your wing guys out there and you play it out. And so no matter who wins the face-off, you're getting an advantaged look and you're getting a quick shot. And so you're getting, you know, 10 face-offs in when it used to be maybe two face-offs in a period because, you know, of elongated possessions or your number one face-off kid was always winning it, and so your wing work wasn't getting as much rep. So that's a full field drill, just takes a defenseman off each side, and allows us to get quick, a lot of face-off reps live, a lot of wing work live, and allows us to play early offense. So it challenges your wing kids, your face-off kids who lose, to get in and play transition defense.
And great. To your comment earlier, I'm patronizing you. I didn't really think it was that great. but to your comment earlier, you know, if you're a high school guy, and you're matching up your JV or your 9th and 10th grade bulls with your 9th and grade attack, and you got two goalies at practice that day, you know, you can run this drill. And, you know, I'm thinking I would run it to maybe best of 9 face-offs or best of 11 face-offs.
Yeah, I mean,
like
you could
do. Get a competition element.
And then the one we love is, I don't know if we talked about it, it's another one that we do that I think probably puts the most stress on a 6v6 defense. It's called Ghost, and it's a 6v6 drill. And then you have a 7th offense. You take about 4 or 5 of your extra offensive players, and you position them around half the field with a ball. And they play out of a 6v6 situation, and when the ball is shot, either saved or shot out of bounds, or turned over, the offensive player who has touched the ball last, whether it be the shot or a guy who's made an errant pass or a shot to a save, he is out. And then the ghost and the offensive coordinator will call the ghost in, and he comes in with a ball in his stick, and he's live. So it's now back to a 6v6, but the ghost is coming in uncovered, so your defensive kids have to scramble, match up, and the ball is always coming in from a different point. It's coming in from, so you'll have an extra offensive player, maybe at X, two on the low, one on each low wing, one on each high wing, and one up top. And say this, so you're 6 so the stress and the communication.
You know, you make me feel really stupid.
What do you mean? I can't.
We run that, I mean, somewhere along, I'm too old, Coach, you know, somewhere.
Yeah.
We had that drill, but the ghost always came from X every time.
No, now you gotta put them all over the place. Cause you want to see panic in the streets. You know what I mean? Like, so all of a sudden you got a kid running in with the ball. Now it's still 6v6, but who's taking who? Who's playing? Who's doing what? You know what I mean? And,
well, you're coach of the year and I'm trying to find Jesus at a small Christian school, man. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, it's, I would say
no,
5 minutes.
I'm being very serious. It's a great idea. And,
you'll know a lot about your kids and your defense. On the teams that can handle that better year to year are your teams at the end of the year. You're going to sit back and probably say, hey, this was a really good defensive team. You know, it was a good defensive team because when put in adverse situations, you know, and we have a big, you know, we call it on defense, we call it a conversation as opposed to communication, because communication can be one word, it can be a nonverbal, it can be a look. Conversation is an ongoing, so we talk as a defense about having that ongoing conversation, and the teams that have that ongoing conversation better throughout from year to year are the teams that ultimately end up being statistically and probably the years we have better teams and make a better run in May at it because of that. And I don't know if I found a drill that puts more stress on six defensive players than this one, you know, in terms of that conversation.
Yeah, you know what? I would put my LSMs in some of the offensive lines.
Oh, yeah. You could do it. I mean, that's the beauty of, you know, you can do that. You can throw D-mini in there. You can throw a face-off kid in there and, you know, and simulate like he's just popped one and he's running down.
You know, off a sub-pattern where you fake the guy running up and he ran back. Or,
yeah.
The situation's dictated that, you know, they had a clear, but they dropped the pass and the LSM's bringing it back in or something.
Yeah. I mean, and so it's there's a lot of different variants of that, but I think from a defensive scramble matchup and that conversation that we talk about all the time is so important to our defense.
I bet J.B. Clark doesn't run that one, man.
I don't know. Maybe. I'm sure he does. He's won a lot of games down there and quite a few national championships, so he might be. He might be called something else down there.
All right, man. Hey, listen, on my website, you will find the link for the prospect camps, and the listeners know, you know, even, you know, winning a Dix National Championship as a coach and coaching great club teams and coaching in Canada and everything. I mean, at the end of the day, I think the prospect camps, although some coaches use them as money grabbers, and that pisses me off,
you
know, 60 guys at a prospect camp paying X each.
Yeah,
your prospect camps are a lot more intimate, and I've actually talked to people that, that have been to your prospect camps because of all my relatives that live up near you.
We do 30, 35 guys, and I think it's such a big when you're talking to coaches that do things maybe, and I'm not saying we do anything very, you know, noticeably different, but the comments I get after our prospect day are amazing to me. Is that some of them, and again, some of them are only run by current. A lot of the players are instructing and running the drills, and the coaches are up in a elevated, you know, press box or a tower, watching it.
The Taj Mahal.
Yeah, and to me, the beauty of the prospect camp is to get down on the field, to be with the kids, to teach the kids, to have them figure out, hey, this guy is insane and I'm not coming and playing for this guy, you know, and the way they do things is not how I see it, or, you know what, I love it, you know, and this is how I want to play and this is the way, the system I'm looking for, and these are the drills that I think that are going to allow me to become a better lacrosse player. I just haven't figured out a way to do it any other way.
Another big thing is the food. You know, the food on it. I'm being serious. It's so much more competitive than it used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear you.
I'm always astounded when I get a guy that comes back from a prospect camp. I just had a guy at a Colorado College goalie.
Sure.
You know, and the first thing he's talking to me about, and I happen to have gone to the same high school with Scott Poplar and pretty good buddies with Pops, you know.
Yep.
Who coached at Air Force, now coaching the D out there with Coach. And that's a great program, too.
Absolutely.
And with a legacy program, you know, a historically strong program.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all he wanted to talk about was the food. You know, if they had a taco bar or something that lit him up like a...
Hey, whatever it takes, you know, it's a recruiting morse, you know. You better feed them, you know, because these athletes, you're going to ask them to do a lot for you on the field and in the weight room, and, you know, and so they need their nourishment, they need to be fed. So
it's different than when I played at in college, man. I can remember going to Navy. They gave us, like, a piece of dried toast with a jar of honey.
It's a little different. You know? It's a little different
And, of course, the other thing was, you know, that's back when I was playing at Bowling Green, which was a great program back in the day, obviously. And, I mean, they got a pillar outside of U.S. Lacrosse now dedicated to that program. But at the end of the day, Coach, that was a funny story. We only had, like, two guys with collared shirts on the trip. And you weren't allowed in the mess hall without a collared shirt. So we had, like, 20, well, I think we traveled, the travel team was 30, you know. But I think we, back in those days, because of budget and whatnot. But we would take our East Coast trip. Yeah, I mean, when we played Navy, you know, that year, only two guys could eat at a time. And even then, even though I was like 200 or 198 back then, you know, invariably the two guys that brought collared shirts were preppies from like Friends or something back in the day and were attackmen that were mediums.
Yeah, probably about 145 so pounds soaking wet. So
I'm telling you, my brother, it looked like a wet T-shirt on a fat chick, man. I mean, I was... But you know, I was so hungry, and then you know, you got all that back in those days: dried toast, honey, raw vegetables, I'm going, like, where's the Ponderosa, man? I mean, yeah, back in the old days. Hey, you are the greatest thing since sliced bread. We're up on it. I want to be respectful of your time. I'm not going to let you go 2 or 3 years before the next one. I promise you that, man. I just love talking to you, and our listeners love listening to you. And you've just done a great job. I've always thought that coaching Eastern Pennsylvania kids would be a blast.
Yeah, no,
you
it
know,
is.
As
I mean,
much years as I've been around lacrosse, Eastern Pennsylvania kids have a hard nose, ground ball, blue collar, lunchbox mentality.
Yep.
Any that I've coached on national all star teams or in selects of camps or anything like that, select teams.
Yeah.
So I just love the kids in your area. And
no, they're good kids, and they've been very good to us. And we've always showed back in the day when, you know, Long Island was obviously still a very fertile recruiting ground, and Baltimore obviously is, you know, obviously as well, that the Philly kids are, they've met the finesse of the Baltimore player with the grit of the Long Island kid, and they all ended up living in Philly, you know. And so the Philly kids have been good to our program.
I believe that, actually.
You know?
I believe that. I mean,
yeah.
My experience is absolutely true.
Yeah, and there's some of the great high school coaches around this area don't get enough credit that, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be mentored by, you know, and it's such an honor when I get a email in late January or February as they're starting to get the itch to say, hey, coaches, you know, what's your practice schedule this week? Can I come out and watch, you know, practice and try to steal some things, to have a guy that's been coaching for 30, 35 years come and watch one of our practices? It's humbling, to say the least. It's a great honor, and it speaks to the exact reason
that he's still winning championships.
Well, absolutely, and it speaks to the lacrosse in this area and our sport in general, you know. So I couldn't be more proud of being from this area and coaching kids from this area, but also being part of the great game that you and I both love, and the others that are involved in being part of this experience. So it's been wonderful.
Very cool, man. Well, listen, stay in line with me here 1 second so I can thank you.
All right, bud.
Here comes the radio voice. You ready for it?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, man. Select Coach Mike, LexCoachMike.com. Got an unbelievable responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it seriously every day. Until next time, God bless everybody.